Here.
Bill Hobbs.
Excused.
Roxy Huber.
Excused.
Mike Lapidus.
Here.
Representative Marostica.
Here.
Joe Maroney.
Here.
Yay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was that? Gerald, what?
Don Mez.
Excused.
Senator May.
Here.
Bill Mann.
Excused.
You've been listening to the tapes of me, haven't you? All right, here. And we have a quorum. Welcome. And welcome, Representative Marostica. I think. Is this your first meeting? I missed the last one,
yeah, first meeting.
And I almost missed this one. So hopefully we won't miss the next one. I looked through the minutes, but since I wasn't here, I couldn't tell whether they were on target or not. So if you've had a chance to look at them and you were at the previous meeting or listening online, I would entertain a motion for approval of the minutes.
I move approval.
Second.
Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rippey.
You have before you the P&L and the balance sheets for a period ending December 31st, 07. You can see the net income to date through December 31st, $68,000. I can tell you that the budgeted amount was about $65,000 for that period, and there are no unusual items in the balance sheet or the P&L. What I'd like to do is give you a snapshot on the budget versus actual year-to-date real quickly, and I'll just do on major headings. Employee costs budgeted through, and these are through January. $86,000 was the actual, budgeted was $99,000. Functions, which are made up of board expense, meeting, user groups, and other functions, budgeted $6,400, actual $7,700. Occupancy budgeted $18,000, or actual $18,000, budgeted $29,000, so our occupancy is less year to date. And if you'll recall, the reason that occupancy number is up higher is expectation of receiving a bill from DPA for some tenant finished build out that we haven't received yet. Professional fees budgeted $134,000, actual to date $114,000. As I look at these, the net income through January, even though it's not represented in the P&L that you show, is slightly above projections. And I would entertain questions on the finance reports.
We didn't have that sheet.
I know. Would you like it?
Are there questions on the finance report?
And then I do have additional finance items. Audit is scheduled to be done by the end of this month. All the internal work done by Clifton Gunderson, with finalization in May for the final, so that it can be reported to the state auditor's office. They have received the internal books, and that's their schedule for completion of that audit.
Any other, are you ready to move to the next?
I am.
Let's, do you have other finance committee items? I'm going to change the schedule just, the agenda just a bit. No, it's still on the schedule that we have an introduction of audience. I think we've kind of belayed that for some time now. But I think it is important that we have an introduction of a special guest here. Greg, would you like to introduce your special guest today?
I am really pleased that my wife is in the audience.
I'm glad we're talking about the same special guest. Sweating bullets for a minute.
Thank you, Senator Cadman.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Mary Lee. Told you he was working here every Thursday for years.
First
Thursday for... Okay.
Kent Glassman.
I feel like more like a target than a agenda item after
Excellent.
After that. The Business Committee met this last month with the sole agenda item to talk about the governance and oversight proceeding with the business portal. And we did that and talked a little bit about what it's going to take within the entities that are participating in that, especially the Secretary of State, Labor and Employment, Revenue, Reg agencies. And following that meeting, there was a subcommittee established that will meet once a month and get a report from the people that are working on the business portal, that being chaired by CI, with representatives of the Secretary of State's Office, Labor and Employment, and Revenue. Dan and CI proposed an initial charter that was in very good shape, but in order to make sure that the eligible government entities and the people that are participating agreed with that charter, they've been tasked to go away, review that charter, come back. Dan's also working on the task order, and they'll report to the subcommittee in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And it looks like we are underway. My thanks really to the Secretary of State's Office, Revenue, Labor and Employment, Reg agencies, because they've really recognized what an effort this is going to be. They put the right resources on it, and I think we can expect some very good findings in 6 months. And Dan, unless you want to add anything to that?
Just to reiterate the thanks to the four agencies, and when I give my report, I'll acknowledge the team members.
Great. Unless I need to buy more time for the chairman or anybody has a really easy question. I think that's about it.
Greg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have a question, but if I can just put this in perspective again about what a unique opportunity this is as an enterprise project that we're going forward with four agencies talking about coming together and how this is going to look with an enterprise solution on this. We changed a significant part of the charter doc from how it originally started. And one of the things says the governance of this project team, which is made up of the people that Mr. Glassman spoke to, it originally said that decision making will be made by consensus and when not possible by a majority vote of the project team. We have changed that to decisions will be made by consensus. And the reason we did that is because when you have four agencies, Department of Reg Agencies, Secretary of State, Labor and Revenue, you can't have a successful project on 3-to-1 votes. There's going to be an agency that is always finding something wrong, or if they do and they feel like it's really a big item for them, it's not going to be successful moving forward. So in this project, and the project team, decision-making and on this requirement-gathering doc, what we're going to do is it's going to be consensus of all four major players on it. And I think that's pretty much a unique model that we've got going forward on this, and I thank the business committee for saying that that's an appropriate way to do business for the project team. No, I was adding on.
All those in favor? Further discussion? Kent?
Nope, oh, we're good. Thank you.
Okay, election of officers. This is our annual ritual. According to our bylaws, we have to elect officers at the first meeting, or the meeting in February. And that is a chairman, vice chairman, secretary, and treasurer, which I'm, obviously I'm the chairman. Jack Arrowsmith's the vice chairman. Secretary Bob, you are the secretary, correct? Am I getting that right?
No.
Who's our secretary?
He was, and it wasn't filled after he was no longer a private sector appointee, but as a...
A vacancy committee election, right?
We don't need to, because we're going to have an election now, and the treasurer was secretary...
Kaufman.
Of State Kaufman, and then by default his appointee.
The only obviously the board makes up the members of this cabinet. The only caveat is that the chairman and the vice chairman must be of the elected official variety. So with that, Senator May.
I move that we elect Bill Cadman as chairman again and Jack Arrowsmith as vice chairman.
Second.
Discussion? Objection? I heard that. Besides the one objection, is there a... yeah. Objection? All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Now, nomination. We need a treasurer and a secretary. Anyone?
Hobbs is not here. We should...
Hobbs should have them both. Treasurers.
I'd certainly nominate him as treasurer.
Second. Do I have a second? Representative Marostica?
Second.
Discussion? Well, if you're listening on the internet.
I'm the treasurer.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the treasurer.
Your car will be around to pick you up shortly. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. And now we need a... Bill Hobbs. Yeah. Is there anyone else that's not here? we need some...
I came to the right
minute. We need... secretary? I nominate Kent Glassman as secretary.
Second.
Is there further discussion?
Is there a job description?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll come later.
That's your first job.
That's right. But we're going to modify.
Yeah.
Deal.
Seeking amendment. All of us in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Unanimous.
Great. Like a Douglas County election.
Wait up.
That was good.
Slower.
Oh, I'm really taking a lot of heat.
And as is typical, everyone except the chairman will make that donation of $500 to the SIPA Benevolence Fund. The executive director's update.
Hanging out with Douglas Bruce or something?
Representative Bruce, to you, Senator. your representative? I think you're in House District 15. Executive Director's Update.
Wow. Thank you, Greg Mr. Rippey. Chairman. I'll try and keep this somewhat short. First of all, I'd like to recognize that we have received the resignation of Greg Jennick as private sector member from this board effective January 29th. It's my understanding that there is an application in before the Director of Boards and Commissions, and we can expect an appointee forthcoming very shortly on that. You also have in your packet here this little breakdown of EGEs, which we've been giving you in the past. I'd like to highlight a couple of things that I think are very positive that you can see that we've done. Douglas County School District, we've got, did we receive that back signed yet, Kathy? Okay, so it still is pending. Very, very interesting project of doing the payment engine for Douglas County Schools. There is no way that parents can pay school fees, library fines, any of those online. Douglas County School District has come to us to ask us to allow that to occur. It will be ready by, we're looking at the start of school year next year. 60,000 students in Douglas County School District, and one of the very exciting parts about this potential project is the back-end system is the same as Denver Public Schools. Once we build this application, it's an easy one to then just roll right back over into Denver Public Schools and a couple others. We're making good progress with some local governments. You see on here we've got one from Phillips County. We're talking with Garfield County, Sedgwick County, and then we had our first city call us this week, Jamestown, who is desirous of some help on doing a website for the community of Jamestown. We're excited to help them with it, and this trust in a state authority with local government has been somewhat slower than any of us would hope, but it is starting to gain some momentum, and I'm very excited about the potential that we've got for that. The next thing I'd like to talk about is...
Senator May.
Greg, how come we only have limited EGEs from these people? Are you working with people, working with departments on some of the others, but...
What are you talking about, limited?
Well, I think we have 19 state executive departments, and I only count 12 of those in here. I don't see CDOT on here.
CDOT's not on there. Military Affairs is not on there.
I see it.
Natural Resources, we actually have that one.
Oh, okay.
This is a somewhat older deal.
Okay.
We don't have one with corrections. We've been talking to them. New one on Department of Education. We don't have one with Energy Management and Conservation, former Representative Plant, although we have been talking with them. Higher Ed is not one that we have one with. Historical Society is one. Department of Law and Military and Veterans Affairs, those make up the agencies that we do not have existing EGEs with. And there's no reason other than we haven't had a desire to have them have us do a project for them yet. But we have been talking with them. The contacts have been made, and we circle back every so often to see how we can help them be a resource.
Senator May.
Is there any kind of common thread as to the reason that we don't? I know that I've had some feedback about the content management system not being robust enough to handle what some of the people would like to do. I don't know.
That's an interesting comment, and I don't believe that's accurate. If you look at the content management system, the CDOT just went out and procured on their own to maintain their independence is the same one. It's FatWire. And if you look at what we're doing within FatWire, it is we've got a number of CMS projects. We are doing a Department of Revenue migration. We're talking with a Department of Reg agencies right now on CMS. I think we have put to rest that comment and that concern of the robustness and the flexibility of it. And again, one of the reasons that FatWire was selected by this board and the previous business committee is the very desirable functionality of allowing content experts to upgrade the system as it goes forward. And so, no, there's not a common thread to answer your question directly. I would say that each IT department is in a different maturation state than others. CDOT for years has wanted to try and maintain some independence, and then they also have the discussion about they're working on federal funds and they're not sure how that works. And that's been our issue with CDOT. Corrections, we have a good relationship with them, and I think we will have a project in the near term, but haven't got to where they need what we do yet. A perfect project for Department of Corrections is one that NIC has done in other states, and it's called ConBucks. And it allows family members or friends to be able to put into account that a client could use in the commissary in one of the facilities. And it's been very successful in other states. There's an example of a project we could do with corrections.
Mike Lokaitis.
I think you answered, this is Mike Lokaitis, by the way. I think you answered my question. Have you looked at the other killer apps and the other portal implementations that have gone on in these other departments, something you could offer up as an opportunity, a case study from other states?
We have done a high level
corrections or
NIC just put out that catalog of services by functionality, and it was just rolling out as we were up in Portland for the partner meeting. And we have looked at some of those and say, wouldn't this be a good application for this agency? It's already being done in Arkansas. It's already being done in Idaho. Those types of things. And, yeah, there is just some natural synergy to be achieved there, and we have been looking at it.
Ken Glassman.
Okay.
The school district piece, is that a non-revenue-generating app for SIPA? Basically, what they're doing is using our payment engine to process.
There would be the same revenue generation that there is on other payment engine applications. We haven't gone to the task order stage of that to determine exactly what it is, but there is a bank fee for using a credit card or if they use an e-check. I would envision that it would be the same as what we see on OVRR, the online vehicle registration renewals. but that hasn't been determined because we haven't got the task order request in hand in the discussions.
I'm just going to say this for new business, but I want to throw this out since you touched on the departments that we don't have something with. It came up the other day in a joint meeting of the House and Senate State Affairs as the Department of Military Affairs was giving us their annual briefing, and actually Representative Lambert brought up the possibility that the Colorado.gov, i.e. SIPA, could offer some assistance with those departments and some of the stuff that they're tasked to do with credentialing veterans and applications for services, et cetera. So maybe we could get them kind of back on the list for touching base and seeing if there's a some sort of a synopsis that they could put together that could point us in a direction where we could provide them some assistance as well.
Be happy to. Okay, moving on in my update, I'd like to discuss a little bit about SysTest. And Richard, this may involve you in just a second, so if you could give me some help here. SysTest contract is slated to expire March 16th. In our contract that we have two renewable options at our option, two-year renewables, and I'd like to take this opportunity to say we are very happy. I am very happy with the job that SysTest has been performing for us, and I would recommend that we renew their contract for another two-year extension. We don't have to do it at this meeting. I'm bringing it up at this meeting so that there are, if there are any additional questions or facts that I can bring forward, I would prior to official action on it next year. I can tell you that on SysTest, the way that contract is operated is on a task order basis. There is no fixed contract amount. The original one had a not to exceed, but it is still driven by task orders being signed and approved. Year to date, our spending with SysTest has been $50,640. Our budget for that same time period has been $56,000, so we're slightly under budgeted spending on that. And the budgeted amount for the total to July 1 is $96,000. I bring up some of those points because I've had the discussion with Colorado Interactive about what it is SysTest is performing, and I'd like to give you an example of what they're doing. In the Department of Revenue, we've got the NET file that allows people to pay their income tax online. One of the things we've been very vigilant about is doing load testing on that application. That application was up and running by April 15th last year. We didn't promote it very heavily because we were just barely bringing it on, and we were quite frankly surprised by the number of people that found it on their own that they could pay their income taxes online by credit card or e-check. But what we've been doing is a load test on that to make sure that if we have a big flux of hits in the few days, and particularly on April 15th, that our servers and our load balancers are in the appropriate state to be able to handle that. We don't want to be like the Colorado Rockies. To that extent, SysTest went in and did a number of load tests on there. We've done some changes and some load balancing on that application, and we are confident that for the load testing that we are doing, which was somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000 hits an hour, was with zero errors. And we are making those changes to the program, and they will be in place by March 1st. That is the type of thing that SysTest has been doing for us in the testing. We had the discussion today about the need for doing some regression testing, and to explain what type of regression testing we're talking about is when we have an existing application and we change something to it. And now we need to go back and make sure before we put that in production again that that change hasn't affected something else that was in the existing program that was out there. That testing has to be done anyway, whether SysTest does it or whether CI does it. But I believe that it's an appropriate use of possibly expanding the use of SysTest and allow our pipeline to get bigger by us participating in this manner on the testing. We found it to be very valuable what CISTES is doing, and in fact a number of other states are looking at how we're using an outside third-party vendor for this testing protocol for other NIC states and the value to it. I can tell you another test tool that CISTES has created along with a off-the-shelf is a web crawler to go in there and Senator May to check the links and make sure that those links work and make sure that they go out there. We've tested it on the governor's website in the last couple weeks, which is a huge website with all the other links that go different places on it. But it's going to be a pretty exciting tool that we're developing here in conjunction with CISTES to be able on an ongoing basis, and we haven't decided how often ongoing is, to make sure that a website is doing what it's supposed to do. And this will be unique to the state of Colorado and our Fatwire system to do that. So what I'd like to leave you with is my recommendation for a renewal of the CISTES contract for 2 years. That vote would be next month. And if any members of the board desire additional information that they'd like prior to that decision, I'd be happy to go after it.
Gary Maroney.
Will SIPA own the tool, or will it be CISTES tool?
That
own joint code?
That one is CISTES tool. It is. We're not going out and buying. We're paying for the usage of it, but not for the tool itself.
Rico Mann.
I appreciate your recommendation, Greg. I have a very limited grasp as to what CISTES is doing and when, and I think I'd like to be able to see some kind of evaluation tool of their work, some metric to judge it against. I don't know right now what we're saying, what we're comparing them to as far as doing a good job, bad job. Nothing's blown up.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, which is a good thing. But I don't know that that's the only standard that we should apply necessarily. I don't know what the contract. I don't know if the contract has metrics in it, and maybe it should. I don't know. I don't know what kind of metrics you apply, and I'm still not sure. I mean, to the extent that all this IV&V stuff, to what extent we feel that we're appropriately using them, and whether we in fact should be using them more or less. Or any of those things? Is there a way that we can take a look at that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Rico, those are great questions. And what I can say is that from the original RFP that we put out there that had much more in it than the way that we're using CISTES currently, there were things such as marketing activities. Also in that original was the Clifton Gunderson and the audit function in there that we're going to be using them on. And I've had this discussion with CISTES that next year I would like this board to consider going out for a separate RFP for auditing services rather than just rolling it into CISTES. But the key functionality in this contract with them is that it's task order driven. And so while we've got this basic contract, they're not empowered nor required to do anything unless we both agree on the task order. And every task order is a not to exceed. Your question about metrics, I'm going to have to give a little bit of thought to on how we measure what they do. It's always valuable to have those. So I can't give you a full answer on that at this point.
Richard has it.
Didn't we used to get a report on from CISTES every month?
We got reports on certain things, and if you look at some of the things they did, like reviewing of the annual business plan, we've got those reports. They have on an ongoing basis, as requested, done special activities. Right now, and I know that they'd be just as happy to give us a testing readout report. They'd be happy to, and we could have. And I get a status report, which I could include in here, of what CISTES does on a monthly basis. Haven't been including it with the monthly, but they do provide me with an IV&V status report on a monthly basis to justify their billings.
Representative Marostica?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The RFP that you originally did when you hired him, could I get a copy of that to read before the next meeting, or is
sure.
there a copy out there? Thank you.
Sure, and
that'll catch me up to speed a little bit on that.
You know, if I can segue here for just a second, Mr. Chairman? By next week, the SIPA board website will be up and operating. This is a secure site for board members. Kathy will distribute the login and the password by early next week. That will be on that website,
okay.
As well as all other pertinent documents that pertain to this board. If there's a desire to post some sensitive material on there, that's where that will be. We're subject to the open records law, so it's not that we're trying to hide anything, but there's not a lot of people that want to see the RFP, but that we will, Representative Marasco, we will have that on there.
Right.
And early next week, you'll get an email from Kathy with the URL and the appropriate login.
Mike Lukaitis?
For the purposes of the board, if there could be like a high-level scope of work or something, kind of the mix, both from an IVD and testing and the different aspects. I don't know, Rico, I would maybe clarify it.
Well, it's not so much clarity, so I have no idea how to evaluate what they've done. One, I don't know what they've done, and two, I don't know, you know how to evaluate it. You know, were tasks on time, not on time, on budget, was the budget probably, I don't know, so we just don't have anything. And
I will come up with something, I'll run it by you, and if it's not sufficient, let me know,
okay.
and I'll have it to you prior to the board meeting.
For sure.
The program you've come up with, SysTest, is very ingenious because both the IVD function and the testing, those work well as a third party from the general contractor and from the authorities. So it's a structure you've got there, from my opinion.
And what I really like about the way this contract was structured as a task order contract is it allowed us and them the flexibility to say, okay, let's look at what we're doing. Because as the RFP was first put out for IVMB, it was completely different than the way we're using them now. Senator, if you remember, we brought IVMB and SysTest in early to help us on the contract with our integrator. Well, that's a completely different role, and we had a task order for that. We had a task order for review of the integrator contract and what we should negotiate and what we should be looking for, and things like you need to make sure that you have a source code is yours, and you need to make sure that you've got this. And they're very valuable in that role. Well, that's not an ongoing role. That task order's done, and we're moving on to the next one.
Senator May?
Well, one of the things that you have to remember is that Greg and Kathy are our administrative people that run our SIPA and support our board. Now, if we didn't have SysTest on board under a task order type of arrangement, then we'd have to have more staffers, which also adds up to paying a salary and benefits and payrolls and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, so far I think it's been working rather well, the way we've been handling it.
And I have to say thank you to SysTest for being flexible on it and really finding the way that we both worked well together for what we need and what they were able to supply. It is pretty much a partner project, the way that they're looking at it. You know, as Senator, as you and I and Representative Cadman were involved in the CBMS project and some of the other ones. One of my criticisms of IVMV on those projects was that they were an independent third party looking at it but never coming with solutions and being part of the solution. And I think in this instance on our project and SIPA, SysTest is clearly a part of the solution and making it better rather than just finding fault with what's going on.
Judge Maroney?
Just historically, I think Senator May is right. What we had talked about at one point was hiring a chief technology officer, and we decided against that, and we decided to hire this outside third party to use on a task order basis because we thought in the long run that it would be cheaper and they would be able to give us a more varied service than just our own chief technology officer. So just to give kind of a historical perspective of where we were with that.
Senator May?
I think we'd all be satisfied if we asked Greg to just give us the SysTech
billing,
the report for the next couple of 3 months or whatever, so that we can at least see what they're doing.
Jack Arrowsman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg, I would just have one question, or maybe a philosophic question, and maybe Mr. Lukaitis can help me with the one of the visions for IBNV is that they're a separate entity, that they have nothing at the table. And it seems like if we are starting to involve our IBNV more in the testing and so forth, now all of a sudden they become a player at the table. How does that affect the IBNV status in this detached piece that we look for in an IBNV?
And I think that is a that objectivity and the maintaining of it is important, but in the testing they still maintain that objectivity. They're just testing either the load or the regression testing, saying this works, this doesn't work. As we ask them to do things such as, we've got an ongoing task order where the person that I work with, Dan Wenger, hi Dan, that we have a, him and I have a weekly meeting that we talk about what's happening within CI, what's happening within the projects that we know. I asked Dan to come in on a number of other things other than just testing. He's involved in our scoring process so that he gets a full flavor of what's happening within that queue process that we have. And then we task and we talk about where our risks are and try and utilize SysTest to minimize risk to the portal. And I think they do a very good job of keeping that objectivity and that separation that's appropriate, but at the same time still coming with, if they see an appropriate solution, going, well, you know, maybe you ought to approach it this way. And that's when I say they're a partner in it, not because they're in there. Their job is still to be objective and give good advice to me and the board.
Eklakaitis?
Things to answer Jack's question, I think SysTest has done a great job responding to the requirements of SIF. A lot of companies that have been in the pure IBV trade have moved to more of a delivery assurance model. They're a third party. They have skin in the game, accountability. But sometimes program management can be bundled with IBV. Sometimes system testing can be done that way too. It abstracts the system testing from the actual integrator
application,
and you know, it creates a report card around that. So there's a growing embracing, so you don't have like 30 vendors running around. So, and then I think Rico has a fantastic point on this: is that SysTest is an important partner, just like CI, and we should all understand their role and how they're being measured. You know, one time, you know, have sort of a readout on that, and you know, I'm sure there's aspects of their operation that, you know, it'll improve the value of our contribution if we know the roles of the vendors that are involved.
And if it's appropriate, and Rico, as I've been listening to this conversation, I think what might be helpful if I was sitting in your seats is to look at it from, okay, scope of work and report card. And however we identify that report card, that's what I'll do. Here's what we expected. Here's what they did.
And for those that want to read the whole RFP, and I think I'll join you on that, I'd love to read it just for instance.
It's great reading.
Ken Glassman.
I think I might have a way of wrapping all of this together, what Rico was looking at and what Mike Lokaitis just talked about. The business committee will be meeting between now and the next board meeting. The board needs to take action on this issue at the next board meeting. So why don't we have, and I don't think this needs to be a motion, but why don't we ask Greg to come and review the past task orders that SysTest worked on from the past year. And we go through and we judge how did they do. We'll have some hindsight, so we'll be able to just kind of judge how it was. And then a methodology for what we think we'll have them do for the next year. That'll help us to arrange what we should budget and what activities we think they're going to undertake. Then when we come to the board next month, we'll tell you what they did, what we thought their grade was, and what our recommendation is for moving forward.
Question? Greg Rippey?
I don't have an issue with that, but historically this has been a contract committee which has been in abeyance for a while, and there's a little bit of difference between what was the business committee and the contract committee. I think that's fine, since all we're really talking about legally from a contract side is picking up an extension of what we do. But keep in mind, if at the end of the day we say, you know, we don't like what they're doing, we want to go back out for another RFP, that's your other choice.
Well, and I think we did a lot of that initially with those committees before we had a working fighting. We saw the evolution of our contract with SysTest as we went from developing from zero to where we are now. So it's I can appreciate where you're going for. I don't know if a year is the right term, or if it's 6 months, or if it's a few contracts so we can get a matrix. I'm not interested in putting a bunch of people and our entire staff of two through 150 hours of analysis for the next 30 days and with the job that they're expected to do as well. So maybe we need to find a balance here, because a year seems like a pretty big scope. And again, this evolution of what they did versus what they do now, we could probably, I think if Greg thought they weren't doing what they were doing well, he wouldn't be suggesting that we hire them to continue. Rico?
Sure, thanks. And I'm not, you know, just to kind of come back to where I started, I'm not looking for some, you know, massive evaluation here.
Sure.
I think we're being asked to look at whether or not to renew a contract. I just would like to have some report or analysis saying that they've done a good job and that there's reason to renew it.
Yeah, and you know, one of the interesting right. things, if and we had 14 responders to the RFP for the IVMV, and we had a matrix on which we scored, and SysTex came out on top. And I can revisit that matrix too and go against what we thought in their RFP response was what helped made them above and scored. But yeah, I got your sense, and we'll get it to you.
And maybe, Ken, as the chair of the business committee, you could look at that matrix in lieu of the recent contracts and whatever they were.
Or we can score those against those.
Sure.
And so it's
sure. Come up with some, but just let's not create a new six-month project out of this.
Okay, moving on. Last month we had Ask Colorado in here and talking about what they were doing on Live Help and their problem with what they were doing on Live Help. I was tasked in the action items to meet back with state libraries and to talk about this issue. And in our action items, you'll see that it says, see if we can find a discuss and find a solution and an extension of Live Help. I can tell you that 2 days after we had this board meeting, I had an at-length call with the librarians. And I put out the question, and I think I shared this when I was down visiting with you, Jack. If we were to pay $7,000 a month right now until we can kind of find this out, would you continue to do what you're doing now? And the answer was a flat no. What happened? So you know, as a, so I had to start thinking, okay, what are they really talking about, and why were they here last month? If that money doesn't resolve it, what is their issue? And I've got all sorts of stuff that Jim Duncan shared with me, and its numbers. But then after that first conversation, when Chris Johnson says, no, because we've already shut off our vendor, which is Tutor.com, from doing it. But as I started looking at what they did and had a subsequent meeting, as we talk about the librarians answering these calls, this is my take on it, is that what they were really concerned about is they were spending money with Tutor.com to staff some of this and answer some of the calls, point number one. Point number two, they were getting pushback from their librarians that says, we're getting questions we don't feel we're qualified to answer. We're getting questions, what's the status of my real estate license? What's the status of Secretary of State? And the librarians are going, historically, Ask Colorado had been primarily driven on the K through 12 track and the higher ed track, helping on homework, students that could call and say, I've got a problem with this. Ask Colorado got way outside their comfort level on what they were asking their librarians to do. So when Chris says no, he says, okay, we'll put up a splash page that goes on after 5 that says, if you have a question concerning government or this portal, click here and we will get back to you in the morning. If it is a general question, click here and you will be redirected to Ask Colorado. We put that up and we've tracked the numbers that happened when we did that. The numbers going to Ask Colorado were not huge. So we had that up there. I met again with the Ask Colorado board and said, are you happy with what's happening now? They go, we are absolutely thrilled. Says, this has totally resolved our concerns and problems. But still leaves the question, are there citizens being frustrated or feeling that they're not getting something? Which is, I think, a much bigger question on a 311 concept of how do we do citizen proactivity to answer their questions. I had the discussion with Mike about it and performance management and really how big a project this is. What we have done subsequent to this is, as we have the live help on there, and it is being staffed by 1.5 FTEs by Colorado Interactive, we're also tracking all those. We're tracking the phone, we're tracking the emails, and it's interesting, and we're breaking them down into portal questions and government questions. It's about 4-to-1 government questions and not portal questions. And so we will continue to track these. Ask Colorado is absolutely happy where we're at. I think the bigger question, Evan, is, are there people that are being... One of the interesting things I see as we're measuring these clicks is a lot of people go to there and don't go any further. They click on the live help and then they go nowhere else. Don't know, and you know, how do we know? Were they frustrated when they got there and said, okay, I'm done? But when we looked back, even when Ask Colorado helping us with it, we had the same rejection rate. I don't know if somebody clicks on it and says, I wonder what this little life preserver is. But we have a high number of clicks that go on there that don't go anywhere else. They don't leave an email. They don't ask to do a live chat or anything else, even in the 8-to-5 time frame. So I don't know. But that's the status of it right now. And I, money didn't seem to be the solution to Ask Colorado. And they're not asking that we do anything differently. I think the question for this board is, do you want us to continue to look for how to... And this is a much bigger question, and it's not a it's a 311 concept and a multiple year process if that's what we're trying to achieve.
And Dreyer?
So the question is, we're still not providing, we are now not providing 24-hour answers to Ask Colorado.
Ask Colorado still is. The live help icon isn't. You can go to Ask Colorado, and they're still staffing with librarians and tutor.com.
And they can get there through us?
Yes, off our homepage. We don't direct them there. That's the only change. We don't direct them, but if they want to go to Ask Colorado, which is right up there in the early thing, they can still go there, and they do go there.
Senator May.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Recently, I had to go over to TPA to get my little... picture made in my badge. The fellow who did that happens to be the state telephone operator. And he gets all kinds of questions. I also went in the governor's office and I sat there and listened to what came into that. There's a poor old lady in there that gets unbelievable calls also. And it's always a referral to somebody who can answer. Is there some way we can help these people?
We have an opening. You can.
Is there some way we can
help these
people through an automated setup or SIPA or something to help them get the answer that they're looking for and direct them? Mainly, it's a matter of directing them to the right place to get the information.
Senator, if I may, jump in
That's
here.
That's me. You're Rippy. Go ahead.
But I've always wanted to be him. We are... Compass Project is launching... Contact Compass is launching when?
Live for 2 months.
Where's the icon on it? Contact Compass is an application that we did with DPA. Keyword to contact is what it was originally. And I think what we need to do, Senator, is tell that person in there, hey, you need a screen right here. Ask them what they're asking about. Put that keyword in, and it will give you a number of places that you may be needing to go. Maybe it's Department of Labor, maybe it's Department of Revenue. But what is that... I don't think it's Secretary of State.
Well, lots of those people, probably most of them, don't have some access to the web or the computer. And a lot of them are older people.
Oh, I know, but if they call in, I think that person that is picking up the phone could help them on that.
We click on Live Help and see what we get right now.
You'll see CI.
We're in soft launch mode, I'm being told.
Yeah, I thought we were in soft launch. I've been on it.
It's actually being used by DPA.
The governor's office, the lady who answers over there, her job is affected by a policy or a bill that passes or a decision that's made or whatever, and it's not an ongoing thing. It may happen for big on one day, and then it starts decreasing to where it becomes not an issue anymore. So I don't know. What happens to that, Evan? Do they just count how many are for it, against it, or complain against it? Or is that all they do?
Yeah. I mean, they are frontline constituent service providers, and we track.
Could you do that with a telephone, punch a one or a two or something like that through a...
Well, that's what happens after hours. But you know, we do our best to answer every call with a live human being.
What this fella does over there, too. Plus he does the
And
ID
I think
cards.
As he has access to this contact compass, it's going to make their job easier.
Well, and then your cars
in my update, I've got another segue to something that I think is important to consider going forward that kind of talks about this, and it speaks to Web 2.0. So that's where we're at. I also got their stats. These are Ask Colorado stats. After midnight... average less than a call an hour.
Okay.
And so, you know, for someone to be available for that doesn't look like a very sustainable business model to me for less than a call an hour. Evan, I'll send you an email on meetings tomorrow. So that's the status of that. As Evan just left, we talked about a new content management system hire. We are having interviews tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have a job offer to someone by middle to end of next week, and we'll be able to support OIT and the governor's office and other agencies on our content management system going forward. One of the things Kathy and I regularly do along with CI and their lobbyist, Larry Hudson, is take care... Hi, Larry, I saw you back there. Legislative bills that are out there, and there's a couple that I'd like to bring up just real briefly. One is Senate Bill 40, Online Voter Registration, which has been assigned to State Veterans Affairs. This is Senator Gordon that is talking about requiring the Secretary of State to have online voter registration and access a number of databases to be able to do this. Driver's license information, insurance information, vehicle registration information. I don't know where this bill's going, but certainly since we deal so much with those databases with the Department of Revenue, it has a potential impact on us. House Bill 1143, credit scoring, which was going to eliminate the use of credit scoring for risk assessment by insurers, lost on second reading in the Committee of the Whole. We don't have a strong feeling on that, but if credit scoring were to be removed as an option for insurance companies, they may rely more heavily on driver's license information, which would, since it's a primary revenue stream for us, might be good. House Bill 1056, Representative.
Can I comment on
sure.
that?
Sure.
Senator May.
I am against credit scoring being removed, because if you remove that, then the balance of that is that those people who have vehicle insurance will go up, and those that have none will be carried. So, you know, what you're doing is you're just moving the cost of that to somebody else is all you're doing. And I don't see anything wrong with credit scoring. I think we're getting into the business of how insurance companies write their policies.
Well, I don't think that this... We're not going to take a position on this
either
or.
We don't take a position now, but we follow
the results
it.
Of
it may
it
have
passing.
Impact on our revenue one way or the other, but I agree with you, Senator. It's not our place to... We didn't get in a lobby one way or the other, but potential impact. The other one on 1056 by Representative White, which would require the Department of Revenue to set up a system for anybody that has a driver's license or ID card to have a point of contact in case of emergency. And I bring that one up. It's in appropriations. It came out of committee and went to appropriations. And Becky Davis and I have had some conversation on some of these things that we're seeing in fiscal notes. And let me read you this part of the fiscal note. No additional state resources are needed to develop website application form. That function will be performed by Colorado Interactive, the private contractor responsible for managing the state's internet portal, colorado.gov. Well, now the fact is, we can probably do that, but this has a directs the Department of Revenue by July 1st, 2008 to set up a system. Now, first, and then the bill won't become effective until signature of the governor, or upon no signature it would become. My point is, we can be backed into a corner trying to bring an application forward on a timeline that makes it impossible for us to do.
But the bill says you can do it. A bunch of people voted on that.
The governor might be doing it because the Department of Revenue can't do it.
Ever since Utah legislature mandated that the Great Salt Lake would not rise any higher, it has not.
Maybe if you remove the safety clause.
Yeah,
I'll
agree.
Do you know who the fiscal note writer was? You might want to contact the fiscal note writer and explain the SIPA to the fiscal note writer.
You know, I have talked to some of the fiscal analysts. This is Chris Ward that was the fiscal analyst on this one. I haven't spoken with Chris on it. But I think it's important for the legislators to know, too, when they see a fiscal note that says, and interestingly enough, they put a fiscal note of $14,000 because Department of Revenue needs 410 hours of programming so that they could do it, but then we've got to have the web application upon a moment's notice. Just part of life. So the Web 2.0 discussion, and Kent Glassman suggested that I contact Senator Rover, and Senator Cadman, thank you for getting him to return my call today. I have a meeting with him on Monday to discuss. He's got a couple proposed bills that he's talking about. One of them is congestion pricing and the IT component of it on I-70 and taking a flash photo of the license plate and sending you a bill, which would require that you access the vehicle registration database. And there's a lot of inherent challenges in that. The second thing that if you read in the paper last week is a Wikipedia to allow citizens to be involved in the lawmaking process. And so I talked to Senator Romer today, and I says, we did have an application called There Ought to Be a Law, and we were so overwhelmed that it didn't last very long of being live. But as those of you that participated in the meeting up in Portland last year talking about Web 2.0, and when we're talking about the millennials that are out there, and if we talk about how we engage the young people with government and how we do the service to them in a different mindset of collaboration and sharing, we need to be looking at that. I've talked with CI. We're going to go forward and see how we can scope, help, the legislature as we're talking about, you know, how do we engage the citizens to allow them to have a valid voice without overloading our legislature, which has zero staff, and the governor's office can't handle it. And so I don't know what you do, because I think worse than taking no input is taking input and ignoring it. And I think that's what we have to be really careful about. You can't put something in place, say, we'd love to hear from you, but not really. And that's it for me, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Is there are there any questions of our executive director? All right, Dan Morrison. Come on up.
That seat's really hot. Right? Yeah. You'll notice when you sit down.
Ooh. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, members. My report is among the stack of papers in front of you. As usual, I won't read it to you, but I'll hit the high points. January, typically for the portal, is our staging month, where we take stock of where we've been, and we look forward for the next 11 or 12 months and solidify our plans for getting there. This January last month was no exception. It also turns out to be in a state where the fiscal year runs July 1 to June 30th, it's the halfway point for a lot of agencies. And what we've seen very often is that after the Christmas break, government folk come back to the office and they take stock of where they've been and where they're going, and they pick up the phone, they call the portal, and they say, wow, we've got some great ideas for applications that we'd like you guys to help us with, and oh, by the way, can they be ready by July 1st? This month was no exception, and that's actually good news for us, because some unplanned opportunities that are going to really be great ones for the portal sort of fell into our laps during the month of January through several agencies, and you'll be hearing more about those as we firm those discussions up in the coming month or two. The biggest activity of the month, and Kent Glassman's already referenced it, is the staging of our requirements gathering for the business one-stop activity. Kent and Greg and I participated in the very first meeting of the project team. The members of the project team are Raylene Morin, who's our senior project manager at CI, and I asked Raylene to come today, but she had another meeting and couldn't be here. Becky Davis representing DOR, Alice Johnson from CDLE will represent that agency. Mike Watley is going to sit in for DORA, and Keith Whitelaw, Secretary of State's office. Keith is the director of the Business Registration Division of the Secretary of State's office and a very skilled and knowledgeable person. He's overseen the development of that suite of applications within the Secretary of State's office that essentially is the benchmark, I think, in Colorado, and it was acknowledged as such in the North Highland Report for those types of online services. So we've got a stellar project team. They've been chartered, as Kent said, to take the project charter that we crafted as a draft and modify that, because as a consensus-based governance model, we need them to come back to the table, and our task as the facilitators will be to craft a task order or project plan, if you will, out of that's acceptable to all the agencies. So that's where we are with that. The next meeting is this Monday, and we'll try to have weekly or biweekly meetings throughout and be reporting the results of that through the subcommittee, the business committee, subcommittee for the portal activity. So that was a big part of our work in January. We also had several incremental improvements. We implemented the new Alive Help solution that Greg already mentioned to you when we had sort of a parting of the ways with Ask Colorado. We were very glad that seemed to be amicably resolved. You'll see when I show you the stats that it hasn't really affected to a great extent the Live Help stats that we have been tracking for you, and I'll refer to that in just a minute. The CMS activity continues to be a big, big part of what we do. We have our training room is booked solid for the next 3 months, and that's great for us and great for the agencies. To address an earlier question that was raised about the CMS, there are some agencies that, as we've worked with them, have engaged in dialogue with us about to what extent they think it's appropriate or an advantage to them to use our content management solution, that being FatWire. And the Department of Natural Resources is one that I'll use as an example. They came to us in the fall, and we started a dialogue about whether it was strategically appropriate for them to move from the content management solution they have in-house, that being SharePoint, an IBM product, to FatWire. And we had we helped them write an assessment so that they could document the decision process in this dialogue that we had with them. And as it turned out, we mutually agreed that since they had more than 100 content managers inside that department that were already fully trained on SharePoint, and even though there would be some outlay of funds to renew the license for that SharePoint product, the overhead involved in retraining 100 people to use the Fatwire product was enough of a deal breaker that it didn't seem strategically like the right decision for them to make to move all of their content into the CMS that we host. That's a very business-like decision, and we support it 100%, and we jointly made the decision together. So there are some agencies where they are so heavily invested in another solution that it simply doesn't make good business sense to recast all of that activity in a new service. It doesn't mean in any way that we're not interested and that they're not interested in having us help them with other solutions. In fact, the process of going through that analysis opened up a number of other opportunities that are totally appropriate for the portal to help them with. CMS just is not going to be one of them for the near term. So I wanted to make sure that we acknowledge that there are some cases where it really doesn't make sense for an agency to lock, stock, and barrel move their content over to the content management. Also not mentioned in my executive summary, we're working closely with Mark Weatherford, the State Information Security Office, to have them do some penetration testing of our security parameters in our infrastructure. We're pretty proud of our security profile. We're CyberTrust certified, and we're very, very passionate about remaining as secure as any other online service that you'll find. Mark suggested that his team be a part, asked if we would be willing to let them penetration test our services, and we said absolutely, positively yes. And in fact, earlier this morning, his team was meeting with my guys, and we were figuring out a way to do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator May?
You know, when we started working on the SIPA bill, and we did a survey of how many people had direct access to the Internet, it was a ferocious figure, I think. As I remember, something like 1,800. Jerry, do you remember the figure? I guess my question is, have we, cybersecurity standpoint, by putting people through the portal, have we made some improvements on that? Are we still got that many out there?
Or there are direct URLs to their site?
Which is a real, you know, I mean,
2000.
You can get zapped pretty good. I'm wondering if our implementation of the portal has begun to close that down a little bit, maybe. I don't know how you measure it. I'm kind of with you. I'd like to see something measured. How would we find that out?
Probably guide us.
Well, a lot of the agencies that have their own URLs have them documented in the literature that they put out to the public. So, for example, if I'm most familiar with natural resources, so if you look at some of the publications of wildlife, parks, the various oil and gas conservation commission, those you can see from their brochure, State Land Board, for example, you can see if they have any of their own URLs.
So would our objective be to get that delivery made through the Internet portal?
Well, I humbly think so, but there's branding that's already been done that precedes the portal. And there are constituents out there like hunters and anglers who are familiar with getting to wildlife that way.
Ben Morrison?
Let me take a stab at an answer to that. One of the earliest issues that Mike Lukaitis and I talked about last year was the domain naming convention that does or doesn't exist in the state web enterprise, and this is a sore point for the very reasons that Bob mentioned. Some agencies are very heavily invested in domain names for services like hunting licenses and fishing licenses that are not Colorado.gov related domain names, and so it is the policy of the state that our strong preference as a state web enterprise is to have agency and department domain names contain Colorado.gov and preferably start with Colorado.gov and have the service follow that domain. However, there are some where, again, it doesn't make business sense to switch out a domain name that's been heavily promoted, that's printed on all the brochures and marketing materials, it's out there in the media. simply for the sake of a policy decision. And I'll defer to Mark Church on the technical answer to this, but I think that we've derived a way that through the DNS process, we can actually track the number of hits and the origins of those hits to state domains, regardless of what name that they are. And that relies on the cooperation of the folks that operate the DNS for the state of Colorado. So we have an emerging ability to track the traffic into and where from those domains. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Well, my concern is cybersecurity, and you know, I want to get into our system and mess us all up or screw us all up. And sure that the more connections that you have out there, the more vulnerable you are for that cybersecurity violation. And if we close it down, that means we've got
better control of
yeah.
it, and we can monitor it better.
Well, Feingold.
This is a question for Mike or Mark. In the vulnerability assessment that was performed last year, did the scope of that include these other domain names that are coming into various agency website equipment and so forth?
Sure did, because they're very comprehensive in their approach. Bob, I can clarify that. Mark's not here.
Mark Weatherford. I know that because we've met with Mark just this past week, I know that he is systematically going agency to agency yeah. and doing a vulnerability assessment and documenting what's found, and they're totally, according to Mark, receptive to that and have been very cooperative with it. So I wanted this board to know that we are also on that list of cooperative folk and are encouraging Mark and his team to do that kind of testing and let us know what they find. I hope that we emerge as a benchmark for other agencies to look at. Finally, on the summary note, we're very grateful to Becky Davis at DOR, who in the last couple of days has invited us to provide her with a with the backside of a flyer, and I'll pass a few of these around. I've only got four or five of them, but this is our driver license online renewal service, and the acronym for the service is VROOM. This was announced last month. We reported it to you. Vehicle Resource Office and Online Motorway, and I've got that memorized by now. It only took me a month.
Okay.
Becky is and the department are going to mail out 400,000 refund checks to Colorado taxpayers in the next month or so, or between now and April 15th. And this flyer is going to be in every envelope. So we will have, courtesy of DOR, a massive, essentially direct marketing campaign. Thank you, Becky. Alerting all of these folks that are getting a refund check to renew their driver's license online. And boy, that's a lot of stamps, and we sure are grateful to the DOR for inviting us to ride along on their in their envelopes.
Right on top.
Very.
It doesn't say broom.
It doesn't say broom.
Room for broom.
We can make room for broom.
There's a reason for that, and that is that the Vroom brand is ultimately going to be the vehicle portal for the state of Colorado. That would include car tag renewals, driver's license renewals, auto industry salesperson licensing, titles and registration activity. All of those things are going to be bundled under the Vroom heading. Until we're ready for that, we're a little hesitant to aggressively market Vroom on the
site. But if you look at the URL on that, it's colorado.gov/Vroom and then renewal license, so Vroom is even in the URL.
Yeah, we're setting the stage for that to happen, but stand by, you'll see Vroom emerging on the homepage as soon as the DOR and we are ready to do that.
Do that.
Vroom? Would you like a V-Room?
I'm going to fast forward now in the interest of time. You'll see on page 4 and 5
the
three websites that we launched in the month of January on the CMS system. These are, in my humble opinion, as the executive in charge of this, these are really attractive websites. We work with the agencies hand in glove to do this. They're in the CMS system, and from this point forward, those agencies can manage these websites on their own without involving us unless they need our help. Those three went live. On page 6, our standard Gantt chart, I'll give you the quick summary. We have 35 active projects. That is projects where we have a task order or a work order. 35 projects. 18 of those will involve no fees of any kind to the public. 17 will be some sort of a fee-based activity that generates revenue for the portal, so it's about half and half. In discussion, those are projects that we have not got a task order yet. There are 29 of those, 7 are free, 14 will generate a fee. It balances out to about 50-50. So we've got an active pipeline of about 50 applications. 35 of those are 55 applications. 35 of those are in active development at this time. Let's see. Page 8, you can see our... This is our
question on 7.
Yes.
These licensings that you have in here like that, those are all separate programs or whatever of a different department, right? We have no standardization of licensing. Future?
A number of agencies conduct licensing under the name licensing.
Lots of them.
The Department of Education has teacher certificates, which are licensing, and DORA obviously is the king of the hill when it comes to licensing of professional occupations. Driver's licensing. So there are lots of credentials which are essential.
So what are we doing here? Just providing a link to an existing licensing package?
I'll have to ask you, Senator, to which one in particular you're referring to. Oh, certified wares licensing, child care facility licensing. The answer is sometimes, for example, if we were to work with DORA on their licensing, which is actually subcontracted to a third-party vendor, one of the things we could do if they elected to engage in that discussion would be to help them with the payment processing for their existing licensing app. Sometimes we do that, and it involves nothing whatsoever of licensing from us. It's just payment processing. On the other hand, child care facility licensing, which is the 10th one, number 10 on page 7, is an application where the agency wants us to actually put the licensing forms online and let these facilities submit their application for a license. That's a perfectly legitimate app for the portal to work on, and in that case we would do the licensing service lock, stock, and barrel for them. So it's a mixture.
And measurement device licensing, for example, Senator, is Department of Ag, and that's scales all around the state from grocery store scales to truck scales. And so you'll see licensing, as Dan pointed out, in all sorts of different agencies. Sometimes it's not people. Sometimes it's a facility.
And it doesn't lend itself to a single solution. It's a collection or a mosaic of different types of licensing requirements that don't lend themselves to a single.
Does that work both ways, where you can go online to get the license and then also a way for the public to check and see if somebody's licensed?
It depends on how that agency has set up their database, if they want to make their database viewable and queryable. That's the agency decision on whether they want to share that, and if they do, how much of their database do they want to share.
Child care facility licensing, we're starting with the lookup facility that lets parents looking for a daycare center to find one close to their house. We're going to do a Google Maps implementation to their database that lets the parents of that child find the local daycare center. And see if they've had any complaints filed against it. So that's the, those are great questions. And
Dan Morrison,
can you?
Yes, sir. Page 8. These graphs represent our online motor vehicle activity. You see the transaction numbers at the top and the dollar volumes at on the bottom graph. They obviously parallel each other almost identically. You saw we recovered handsomely in January from our low point in December, which I'm told by DOR was a natural phenomenon because there's simply fewer vehicles bought and registered in December and November. So that continues to go strong. Page 9, I'll reference this just briefly the live help chart. You'll see this table. It's not a chart, it's a table. The 2007 numbers are presented there, and those include the Ask Colorado numbers, okay? So when we reported in November that there were 1,350 live help sessions, about half of those turned out to be Ask Colorado sessions that had nothing whatsoever to do with a government service or a government-related question. That's what our research told us. So if you look down at the last one, 2008, Live Person, which is the name of the service that we use, January, we had 560 live help sessions. Those were virtually all government-related live help sessions that we handled, the two staff that we have in our office. And if you reference back to January 2007 at the above, we had 600 in the month of January last year. So we're virtually back to where we were January last year, and that's after getting rid of what appears to have been half of our volume of live help sessions were really questions that the portal shouldn't have been answering in the first place. And I think that brings me to the conclusion of my presentation. You can see the graphs on page 10, which track our accesses by the public. We continue to be steadily increasing the number of public accesses, somewhere between 2.5 million and 3,000 accesses in the month of January. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions?
Oh, I do have one more part, the financial report. Oh, yeah. And I'll just divide these in half and let you pass those around.
Well, Dan, while you're passing those out, have we ever launched a new app and then seen page views jump that we could attribute to that new app pretty directly?
Well, I can tell you just anecdotally that last year when the treasurer, the state treasurer, went on TV with a gold ingot and said that you can go to colorado.gov/whatever it is to see if this is yours, we almost crashed the servers with folks trying to access us in the next 45 minutes.
About maybe revenue generating rather than revenue giveaway.
World Series tickets.
I'm glad we didn't get involved in the Rockies full season tickets. It's an interesting question.
I don't expect you to, but it would be interesting to know, especially if we get a bunch of counties up that are doing motor vehicle registration, which is a revenue app.
Right.
We get 18 of them up, and we see this big
ask
lift.
Us that question in May after the tax deadline passes. I'll bet you that our April stats are going to show a nice blip related to tax-related stuff. The financial report is all good. Typically present a three-month view, and that's what you see here. Revenues are fairly what you don't want to see in financials like this are peaks and valleys. We have a very steady stream. Everything looks great. The most interesting thing to me as a person in charge of diversifying this revenue portfolio, the bottom box shows by service where our revenues come from. And you'll see some new ones in there this month. You see driver's license renewals. And again, remember we're reporting on December numbers, not January numbers, because of the way our books work. Driver's license renewals is a new service. Douglas County Criminal Justice is a new service. We'll see more of those through the year as we launch new revenue-generating services. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Does anybody have anything that they would like to discuss for the good or the order, besides Greg Griffey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to impose on Dan to introduce to us his newest project manager.
Oh, thank you. What I forgot to mention is that we hired two new project managers last month, and the first one that's joined us is Jennifer Blackwell. Most recently from San Francisco, California, but she is a veteran of the Tennessee portal. She was a three-year emeritus project manager in the Tennessee portal, and we're just delighted that she agreed to come back and somewhat curious that she agreed to come back and work again with Aaron Boyd, who came also from the Tennessee portal. So welcome to Jennifer, and we're looking for great things from her.
Greg Rippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to just publicly acknowledge my thanks for Becky Davis. As we put up Vroom and what she's doing for the business portal and the time that she's putting in, I think it's just incredible, her commitment to the portal, certainly to the Department of Revenue, and the help that she's been giving us. Thank you.
I have one brief announcement. Tomorrow at 11:30, the governor will be having a press conference with Mike Lukaitis, myself, and some other members, and hopefully Senator May, and I know several of the directors, of his directors, to announce the OIT consolidation legislation that's going to be introduced tomorrow, and we have, I think, around 60 House and Senate co-sponsors on that bill, which is a pretty good start. So you are...
Yeah, we just need 40 more to...
Senator Cadman, I have had co-sponsors vote against me, though.
Yeah, I know you have. that's why you're not in that business anymore. I'm glad you found something else to do.
tough room to work.
All are welcome to attend.
And I think with that, we are adjourned.